same date, same time frame. This is a continuation of an interview with personnel, biology personnel of the 23rd Auburn Division at Khartoum. This is an interview with Colonel James Bricker, the deputy senior advisor for the 23rd Auburn Division. Sir, how long have you been assigned to your present job?
I've been here since January. Months of that, I don't know right now. But I've been here in Khartoum since the 22nd day of April. So I arrived as original team with the 23rd forward here.
Where had the 23rd Division been prior to that, sir?
The 23rd Division, DTAOR, covered 11 and a half provinces. We had regiments in Songmao, Dalat, Bondi Tut, and then they were further subdivided down. We had part of the 44th at An K. We had part of the 45th at Funan, and we had some at Pleiku, and we were spread out all over two corps. This is one of our real problem areas for getting the division together to really to perform the first time together in combat as a division. And they closed here the night of the 13th
of April.
Of May, the whole division. And the main attack placed on the 14th, so.
Well, sir, when did you first get word that your division would be deployed here to Khartoum? In other words, when you were notified and when you closed? You closed on the 13th. When?
Well, we were slowly deploying forward. In other words, we had a regiment at Funan, which was south of Pleiku. We had part of a regiment at An K, which regarding the route from Quinyan to Pleiku, the Mangyang Pass. I reckon about the first movements, of course, back in early March. And then we moved on up part of one regiment came up to Pleiku and deployed to Fire Base 42 and 41 for the Khartoum Pass defense. Mm-hmm. And then they were deployed there fighting in the pass for months or so. And we changed regiments there. The 53rd was in first, and then brought in the 45th. And we started closing in here on the 22nd. That was the day that they passed, 22nd of May. April, that was the day the pass was closed.
So conceivably, if you had to have been reinforced by county forces, what unit would have reinforced the 23rd, sir?
Would you happen to know?
Within two corps or from anywhere else, as has ever been discussed?
Well, the only reinforcements we had that were not engaged were ranger units, border ranger camps that had been pushed back and had suffered heavy losses and really had real morale problems. So that was the only reinforcement. By the way, of course, through armor, we have 2nd Brigade, which the 3rd came out reinforcements. The road being closed, but then we reinforced the fire, and of course after the airfield closed, limited the number of people we could bring up by what was limited to helicopters.
Right. Sir, would you describe what the general conflict was for the defense of the city when the division had closed in? We talked to the regimental advisors, they described it. Ground and everything. Perhaps you could give us some more details on the concept from the division level.
Well, we were deployed to the north and west of the city. By the time we moved in here, we had a 6th Ranger Group, 2nd Ranger Group, and we had a brigade of airborne. So the airborne was Fire Base Bravo, which is north of Lodin. And, of course, Tancan fell 2 days after arrival. So our forwardmost element was at Fire Base Bravo, which is just north of Lodin. We had the airborne there, and then we had at Fire Base Lima, we had the 6th Rangers. And then at Fire Base November, we had 2nd Ranger. So we had 3 fire bases out in front of us.
had him in his evening mass, brought a firepower against it, and then withdrew. And, well, unfortunately, at Fire Base Lima, the Rangers there, after conducting a very successful battle, left their position.
Fell up on Robert Rich?
And left their position, broke communication with us, and did not establish communication completely away from the fire base. So they had to EMG back for several days there. Unfortunate, because they had conducted a successful defense.
We're talking to the people back at Pleiku. They said yesterday that they had taken so much fire, so much casualty that I forget who it was that we talked to.
Well, they were not out of ammunition, and the casualties were right excessive. I think it was personal opinion is just about what defeated us up here. We had airborne, we had Rangers, we had a division that never worked together. We had RAF that were pretty proud. Colonel Long was a very proud commander, and there was conflict there. So you had about three colonels at that time. General Baugh was still a colonel at that time, relatively new to the division. And he had never worked with the regiments before. With one of them, all regimental operators. So this is one of the things that I think the most significant lesson learned is the unity of command, of the command itself. So these people were fighting each other. They were reporting back to Saigon, reporting back to Pleiku, wherever their boss was located, and they're doing goddamn well pleased. And when we were able to instead of everybody else and just the regiments of 23rd here, they couldn't bicker with each other. They had to get along with the battle defending the city. So again, Lima, I moved out of Lima. And we went back. November was the most northern. And we set up the defense with that base out front, and then one regiment, two battalions along the two battalions here. We had one battalion here, two battalions here, a battalion back here. And then we grabbed the fence line like this, and we had, of course, we had people across the river, and we had the river line here. And it kept coming in, coming closer and closer. We just kept tightening. So we finally had to withdraw from here, literally first, then here. And we never did have to withdraw any further than here. We kept one battalion out there, and what you have to do is move it from there and mortar and mortar range of you. It's dead, man. And the defense closer and closer. We really had, on the northern, we had all of the army forces. To the south, we had RF forces. And from time to time, we had to take the army forces and operate it to this particular area, either to get rid of a penetration or a spoiling operation. But the army up in the south did fairly well after they got done again. We had many, many problems with everybody digging. We just never had to dig in against guerrillas. You know, been running around chasing guerrillas day in, day out. And they had no, never really tested, been tested under fire. You know, heavy concentration of mortar or artillery fires.
Well, so that being the case, what do you think has been the reason why the defensive content has been successful so far?
Well, number one, I think that on the night of the 14th, because of a good psychological warfare, excellent propaganda on the part of the Vietnamese, which we were also involved in, we had
something to check out.
Been able to steal them in the conference spike tank. I got everything I could get from analog, all the pictures. I saw some of the pictures down there. I probably had those sent up. JGS, they had a very fine poster on the law against the T-54, T-59. To put those in the regiments, General Baugh himself, being a tanker, very much interested in armor and counter armor as well. He personally had interest in armor. And we had training on the wall, the old barracks around here, and the men stayed in the position. And that's just a written thing. Now, all the firepower that we had, and the Air Force were doing a wonderful job. The spookies and inspectors and the toes and everybody was doing a great job. But someone had to stay in the fight, and they stayed up there. The third corps, they moved in the third corps. They went out, bingo, right into the company. The 44th had quite a bit of experience down in the pass.
Yankee
Pass, Virginia Pass. And they had been pretty good battles with the North Vietnamese down there, so they were probably one of the most experienced of the 45th and 44th both. So the guy stayed, and we made him mass, and we were able to use the arc light close to protective fires, really close. We had tremendous support from Spectre also. It was very valuable during the night. Psychologically,
how about aerial resupply? Did that work effectively? Aerial resupply.
Yes, we had effective aerial resupply. Of course, we had many problems being a U.S. U.S. show, but a team here that was down to Barrow. We lost. Let's see, we had one A-levels killed, and we lost four of the five. So we had to be augmented by captains and lieutenants from various other places. So here we were building a team, and then involved in every operation. This was the problem in itself. Becoming operators, we were pretty much advisors and working along the lines of Vietnamization.
Did they use any smart bombs up here, the Air Force?
We had only one report of smart bombs, and we found out they were dope bombs the next day. We had ordered up and had fragged smart bombs for the bridges, but the weather never got to us. And so we ended up only attacking the bridges with regular iron bombs, and we were successful and knocked out one bridge out of three. Near misses, pretty good job of
So, are you satisfied with the air support you received during this period?
Absolutely. Going back to what we were talking about earlier on the air resupply. Here, the problem here was that we could not lose airplanes, but we had to get the job done. So the methods that we went about, the counter rocket fire, the counter battery fire, and then we had the Australian missile. We had to put up illumination at night so they could come in.
You did have an Australian missile?
Well, we had a threat. And there was two Fox 4s that reported that had been fired on. And, of course, this put everybody in a flap.
Do you recall the day when this report came in?
It's in the log. It's about maybe 12 days ago near that period. It's in the log. So without the a sufficient number of people, the lack of really a team, and then the minimum requirements that the Air Force placed on us, it was a blast to keep there.
So what do you think of the enemy's tactics in his attempts to take contact?
Well, the whole concept, as far as I'm concerned, starting off the big picture, is very, very stupid. Their constant drive to take the fire bases. Some of them were important. Some of them were in line of communication. Some of them were not. They get bypassed and come right ahead. His inability to exploit success at Tan Can, for example. I don't think probably he just...
You mean by waiting after he took it?
Right, and waiting and waiting. And, of course, I think it was beyond his most greatest expectation that he was going to be successful at that game. But yet, if you look on the other side of it,
the complete surprise that he had with his tanks, huh? And I think he was pretty damn sure that no one knew he had, that we didn't have knowledge of his tanks. So he, in the relatively small number of tanks that he had, he was gambling that the tanks were going to be effective.
So I think that itself, not being able to exploit his armor, and of course the way he used his armor,
he had two battalions, and he ended up having 9 or 10 tanks back here and 9 or 10 tanks back there. Of course, maybe we destroyed a hell of a lot more tanks than we know about. Mr. Van, for one, saw 27. I've seen only 17. Of course, he's been further north than south. But,
it was just uncoordinated attack.
Tankers ended up on the objective without any infantry. One PW told us that he thought he was told that he would join the infantry on the objective. Well, he got to the objective, he saw infantry. They were our infantry. They were Arvin infantry. And they knocked the hell out of his tank. They came down and they attacked into the built-up up area. You were up in the 44?
Right.
Huh? Why did they go into the built-up area? Why didn't they go on down, huh? Airfield, right into sector headquarters, huh? And then back here, they got them built up here. Lack of reconnaissance of the company commander's tanks. The most forward one there, that was the company commander's tank. He'd been highly decorated. And
was he killed or what?
Yes, he was killed. 69, and a huge banner, flag, but beautiful thing, embroidery and everything, honor. Tank on the 1969 battle.
In his tank?
Yeah. And detailed diary of, you know, all their various battles and so forth. And, so the use of armor, the coordinated effort, and thankfully, he was not as prepared as he should have been. I don't know why. Lack of leaders, lack of training, but they fought like dogs. I mean to tell you, they're stubborn, they're tenacious. My hat's off to them, the infantry. But it seemed like he just didn't have his tactics in order. Or didn't know what he was going to fight with one or the other. I think he probably thought that Arvin would move out.
What about the friendly side, sir? What are some of the things we should have done that we didn't do?
Oh, God, that's a long list. Well, we got up here, and it was basic fundamentals. We were up against a book. It was just like training a bunch of basic trainings. Digging, carrying, cleaning the weapons, patrolling. Again, a lack of aggressiveness on the part of all concerned. Well, with the exception of one regimental commander, I think the 45th regimental commander is very aggressive. I think the division commander is also very aggressive. But the problem of Arvin, which has been a long time. They stay in the regiment a long time, and the regimental commander gets to know his troops, but thinks a lot of his troops, and he doesn't want any of them killed. General Baugh came in, and he loved his troops and so forth. But he hadn't become a father. He was a general, huh? And when he gave the order, he brought in fires close in on the position. He gave orders to airstrikes extremely close and so forth. The regimental commanders would dare. In general term, basic fundamentals. They'd been fighting guerrillas and doing a damn fine job of it. But when they got up into having to set up a defense, we actually had to throw it out, lay it out, and walk it off. I mean, when the fire started, the Vietnamese staff folded. I mean, they were not thinking rationally, and we just had to sit down and draw a defense and walk a damn thing and literally kick ass in order to get this thing done.
Now, after a while, though, picked it up, and every battle, a little more confidence. And where initially I was very discouraged about the whole damn mess. And, of course, the refugees streaming back, the 42nd Regiment, the 47th Regiment, thousands and thousands of refugees. They just tore this combat to pieces over here, you know, getting the refugees out there. And but then as the time went on, they have improved and 100%. And I really am real proud of them.
short time, they've come around with. And even offensive operations, they're doing better. Mm-hmm. But again, considering the time from the 14th, the first time, 14th day of May, the first time this division ever worked as a division, or ever was up against real tough North Vietnamese units.
I was wondering, sir, I had asked this before, about the... Was the main avenue of approach thought initially to be down QL-14?
Sure, absolutely.
And this was supposedly by the 320th at that time. Right? Okay, and the later on in the 2nd Division joined in. Was this infiltration, or they came? Did they come in from your northeast and your east?
Well, the 2nd into the 8th Division with two primary regiments, E1, which was attacked up into this area, plus the 66th. And 141, which came in from the south. And we found evidence today of 60 bodies that were across the river. 60 bodies that we had not known about. We had thought that we had killed at least a battalion, but we hadn't proved it. And today, finding 60 bodies plus other bodies that we found, so forth, plus the equipment we switched up. I just wish you people could have seen the equipment. We had one of those big houses, one of those big ones up there. We certified the weapons. Matter of fact, we got out of pontoon itself, right up in that area, right up in here, called the Charlie area. We got the sporting weapons for a full regiment.
You mean the cruiser?
Uh-huh.
Well, this, when they did come around and you found them coming in on your northeast part, was this unexpected, or had intelligence given you an accurate picture that they were coming from us?
Absolutely. We were never surprised. We had the calve out. We did a magnificent job, and we literally learned a lot from that by having American, well, I went with them many times, and at least a major, right with the calve, so that we could call back and check early. Here the guys were busting their hiney for us, sticking their necks out. They don't mind doing it if they can have some retaliatory fires real quick-like. So we rode with them so that we could give the necessary command attention to it to get the fire. And the calf was usually a reliable source. Hey,
how you doing?
No, the usually reliable source... information that we had was outstanding, and it proved to be very effective. We had excellent exploitation of witch hunts. Excellent. I mean, the two has been the two for this division for 5 years, and he knows everything there's to know about order of battle. He has memorized. He dominates the three completely. He dominates anybody but the division commander. And,
what's his grade, sir, Lieutenant Colonel?
He's Lieutenant Colonel. And a hard working, he's sick. He's sick all the goddamn time, but he works hard. He works himself into it. He's a...
So we've heard nothing but accolades, really, for the U.S. air power as it was used in Battle of Canton. What about the VNAP?
Yeah, the air support. VNAP improved daily, and finally, before the big battle was all over, VNAP were doing things that absolutely unheard of. They tackled at least six 51 calibers up here, right with the OA-1E, and destroyed two of them that I know of. Matter of fact, I wrote and Mr. Van sent it on forward to a recommendation for award for this pilot. They, right into the heat of the battle... For example, we first started, we backed down to play two. They might get there at 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. Back. And, before the battle joined up here, they were the first aircraft up here. And Sundays, you couldn't get them off the field. So now, it's an SOP. The pilots, for example, a 10 can lead. A guy went down, Major Bowen, the squadron commander, picked up 22 people on the ground because we hook failed. We took a hook up and one engine went out, and we had to bring the hook back to the VNAP hook. So they had about 71 people down there, and they got 52 of them out. He got 22 on his own bird. They have been very brave. They mistreat the aircraft, the helicopters. And it irritates all the Americans to see them max everything, you know. But my hat's off to you. Close air support in towns and places, you know, that we just couldn't have done it. And they were here when the fast movers couldn't run. They could work under the low clouds where F-4s couldn't. We've had to fight. Not only have the Air Force take full credit for the Air Force, we've had to fight to get out of here. I mean, we've had to. And Mr. John Paul Vann was the guy that was doing fighting to get there. He really gave us support. He was here every day, and our smallest problem was his problem. We give a hell of a lot of credit to John Paul Vann for getting air support, because they wanted to do things their way, and they wanted to win the war. And of course, it was a lot of bad mouthing back and forth. What we had here in two Corps, we had a two desk that was filled up with a lot of MAC people, SAC people that put into the ALO program, KC-135 pilots, been trained in the O-1, transitioned to O-1, O-2, and put in. They did not know the tactical Air Force. We finally got a real fighter pilot up here to be our tactical air control team here. And after we got that, he was familiar with it. And it wasn't all peaches and cream to get the Air Force to do it.